Friends, before we begin this episode, I want to extend you a personal invitation to join me here on the campus of Midwestern Seminary and Spurgeon College for our upcoming Spring Preview Day. On April the 11th, you'll be able to meet our faculty, enjoy some incredible Kansas City barbecue, tour the Spurgeon Library, take in all that is Midwestern Seminary and Spurgeon College, and also be entered to win incredible gifts like a new MacBook Air, which we trust will position you well as you prepare to be a student. For more information, please go to mbts.edu. That is mbts.edu. Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome H.B. Charles to the podcast. H.B. is the senior pastor of Shiloh Baptist Church in Jacksonville, Florida. H.B., welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thanks for having me. It's a joy to be with you again.
Yeah, we're recording this podcast while you're on campus this week for our Spurgeon Lectures, giving our fall 2018 Spurgeon Lectures. We do these annually, and over the past 6 years, this is our sixth installment. Since I've been here, it's been a real privilege to envision these and to see men of God come and preach for us. We had our first lecture fall of 2013 with a hero and mentor and friend to the two of us, Dr. John MacArthur, and then over the years, we've had other friends like Al Mohler, Mark Dever, Alistair Begg, Legan Duncan, and then this year, H.B. Charles. So, man, it's just every year I'm encouraged by these lectures and by what is preached, but also the fellowship, and it's great to have you here, both for your preaching and for the personal fellowship that I'm enjoying. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here and honored to be listed among those great men of God.
Well, hey, you are at Shiloh Baptist Church, Shiloh Metropolitan Baptist Church in Jacksonville, Florida. You've been there right at 10 years.
Yep.
And tell us just briefly what the Lord is doing there and what you're encouraged about.
Yeah, I am grateful that God has blessed us to see 10 years there. Now at Shiloh, we are just about to celebrate those 10 years together in the next coming weeks. And God is blessing the congregation to bear fruit from our gospel labors. We are this season one church in two locations. And also this year, we've been able to start a Spanish-speaking work that God is really blessing to draw to Christ those who are part of that ministry. And I'm just excited and grateful. I will tell you, my strength, I think, is in the pulpit. So these days also call for a lot more administration things and things like that for me to pay attention to, but those are good problems to have. And I'm grateful for all that he's doing in the life of our church.
Well, and I refer to you often as a preaching machine, not just for Shiloh, but your ministry abroad. You preach around the country. Mm-hmm. Seems like every week, either through personal conversation with you or on social media, I see where you're preaching, hear where you're preaching. Mm-hmm. And man, that just speaks so well to you, your love for preaching and the gifting God has given you to be able to show up and parachute into a church or a pastor's conference, seminary setting, and really equip and minister to the saints of God there. So we appreciate your broader ministry.
Oh, thank you, brother.
And if that weren't enough, you also are an author, and you've written a number of books. We talked over lunch today about some projects you have before you now. But today I want to really zero in on one of your books called On Preaching, and I love this little book. It's so very well done. I commend it to pastors and to friends, including those listening to the podcast today. The title of it is On Preaching, Personal and Pastoral Insights for the Preparation and Practice of Preaching. You got a lot of P's there, HB.
Yeah, I do.
And it's by Moody Publishers, and that's just a great little book. It's a pretty quick read, but it's chock full of practical and biblical advice for preaching and for preachers. And so today on the podcast, we can't go through all of your chapters here. You have about 30 chapters in the book, but I do want to zero in on one of your chapters and one topic and just elaborate on it with you today. That is the preacher and self-glory, the theme of the podcast today. And really, we built it from your chapter in your book that you entitled, Do You Want to Be Somebody? The Preacher and Self-Glory, taken from your book On Preaching and the chapter, Do You Want to Be Somebody? Help us to know, for our listeners, what is the chapter about, broadly speaking, and what are you getting at by way of concern with that topic and with that chapter?
Sure. So that chapter is pretty personal for me. As a young man, there is a pastor who still serves in Los Angeles, Dr. R.A. Williams of the McCoy Memorial Baptist Church, a black pastor who is a key influence in my life toward expository preaching. Taught me a lot. And I was honored to have him preach for me as a young pastor. My ministry was beginning to get more attention in our city. He was a well-respected pastor in our city. He's preaching multiple nights for us. And a lot of pastors came out to hear him, including some well-respected leaders in the city and in the region. And we had dinner in my study afterward. And a lot of the pastors were there. And some of the men are telling me that if you do this, your ministry will take off. If you do that, you'll get more speaking invitations. If you do the other, you might be set up for a denominational position. And he just keeps jumping in, Dr. Williams does, and talking about his ministry that has none of those ties to the things they were saying was necessary. And I really said, you know, there's a couple of our denominational leaders here. And he said, I never will forget. He's like, yeah, I know there's leaders of the convention here. He kept using convention. And he's telling me about the places God had used him to preach and the things God was doing in his ministry. And he is giving me a counter testimony to some of the advice being given. And I was nervous that he was offending the other guys, but it took me a moment to figure out that he was trying to say something to me. And I started paying attention, and he went off on this long speech about just committing yourself to being faithful where you are and preaching God's word where you are and doing God's will and letting God handle the rest. And at the end of it, he just said, you know, well, maybe I'm just wasting my time on you because I think you want to be somebody.
Mm.
I don't want to be anyone, nobody. I just want to be God's preacher. Let God handle where he'll get me, what he'll do through me. He'll be my road manager. He'll handle that. But I think you want to be somebody. And I think that's going to be your problem. And I just broke down in tears. I don't want to be nobody. I just want to preach. but that experience stuck with me. And I do think now, so many years later, my own life in many ways is a very testimony to that. That if you take care of God's business, God will take care of your business. Yet, at the same time, there is this constant pressure for platform and prominence and notoriety that the preacher has got to guard his heart from.
So when you think about preaching in church history, obviously we now are, for many centuries, have seen preachers elevated through the use of what was then modern media. George Whitefield, his ministry was expansive, and modern media helped to fuel that, right? The printing press and Benjamin Franklin getting behind Whitefield. You think, of course, the preaching of Charles Spurgeon and the tentacles of the British Empire helped to carry his sermons around the world and the printing media that came with those. Then you come into the 20th century, and of course, you have incredible media. You have radio ministries taking off. You have television ministries taking off. You have the possibilities of mass amplification, that where you could speak to massive crowds. You know, read Billy Graham here and have that voice projected to 100,000 people. And of course, we're in the 21st century, which has gotten altogether more complicated with social media and brand awareness and brand communication and how we present ourselves on social media. And all of that rolls up into a scenario where, frankly, many of us, if not all of us at times, can be prone to self-glory, yeah, prone to self-promotion. So here's my question for you. How might the preacher know if he's prone to self-glory?
I think we got to start with the priority of Proverbs 4:23. That above all, you must guard your heart with all vigilance, because from it flows the issues of life. It's the wellspring of life. So I would just say, first of all, that you must be constantly guarding your own heart and being on the lookout for temptation and pride and a desire to be someone. I think connected to that, I think the tricky part about pride is its utter lack of self-awareness. I think you also need godly people, people who love you and are not impressed with you as well, also on the lookout to see things that you can't see in your blind spots. And so in this regard, people ask, you know, how do you keep a level head? And I'd say, have you met my wife and children? I mean, I'm dad to them. And I'm on the road or at the church, and whatever they think of me, my wife and children have a great deal of respect for what the Lord has done in my life and is doing in my life. They're just not impressed. I'm Crystal's husband. I'm my children's father. And I have friends who love me enough to just kind of talk straight to me, and they're not impressed with me enough to kind of pull punches. I think you've got to be guarding your heart and trying to be self-aware about those temptations toward self-glory. But I also think you need to build an infrastructure so that there are others who see the blind spots that you won't be able to see.
So with that accountability in your life, with other people who can see those blind sides, who are tracking with you, I mean, that is an essential ingredient. I guess if you tease this out, mm-hmm. and self-glory goes unchecked and it continues to build to a self-centeredness, a narcissism, mm-hmm. a world in which you are the center of the universe, mm-hmm. that never ends well for ministers, does it?
It doesn't. And I think it is a subtle, I think, sometimes unnoticed thing. If I may share, about a week or so ago, I was doing a conference in Hawaii. And
just go ahead and rub it in.
Yeah. I'm suffering for the gospel.
That's right.
Honolulu. But because of my miles added up, I got bumped up to first class. And I got one of those stretched out seats. It was just amazing. I can tell you, I was not through customs where I started thinking, am I going to get bumped up on the way back?
Now, if you're 6'6", that's an appropriate thought to have.
Yeah.
You should save those points and give them to me, HB.
But I kept thinking about it over the course of the trip, and it was a concern. And I was saying to my wife, this is the danger of the self-glory, the platform, the attention. You are grateful for it, and then it shifts and you begin to expect it.
Mm.
And God humbled me on the way back. I ended up sitting in the middle seat next to a 6-foot guy, and I was scratched up all the way.
He humbled you and him.
Yes. Absolutely. In the very back of the plane. So I'm grateful for the important lesson. But you have to guard your heart, because when you start shifting from a gratitude to an expectation, you know, it's the passage in Second Chronicles 26 about Uriah. That 15th verse says he was marvelously helped until he became strong. And then he was lifted up in pride to his own destruction. And the rest of that chapter shows his self-destruction and how he invited the judgment of God. But the whole first half of this chapter was a great success because God helped him, says the chronicler several times. He was marvelously helped. I don't know what that means, but sign me up for that. But somehow in the midst of that, he forgot where his help came from. And he began to be lifted up in pride. And pride did what his enemies couldn't do. They couldn't defeat him in battle, but he defeated himself because he was lifted up in pride and forgot that this is about God and not about him.
Well said. So let me ask you this question. I would love you to reflect on, HB. Why is self-glory so heinous? What about it is so offensive to God?
As you ask that question, what comes to my mind is Romans, the doxology in Romans 11, and particularly that 36th verse says, from him are all things, and through him are all things, and to him are all things. And then to him be glory. The only one that deserves any glory is the one from whom all things, through whom all things, to whom all things come. And you just got to remember, God did it all. We didn't do anything. This is 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7. God has placed his immeasurable treasure in jars of clay so that the surpassing power may obviously be of him and not of us. Really, what is the crisis of Uriah in Second Chronicles? is that he is taking honor and glory that is not his. And I think in a most spiritual, theological terms of this, self-glory is plagiarism against the Holy Spirit. Mm. It is taking credit for things in our life and ministry that only God can do. God will not share his glory with another, and that includes his own preacher. And if there's anything of true worth in our ministries, God did it, we did not. And it is to dishonor his holy name for us to take credit. And you've got to be careful, because I do think you should strategically use all the means possible to get the message out and reach people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. You've got to, in the same time, be careful you don't cross the line where you are using all of these means to build up yourself rather than spread the gospel. And that can easily happen if you are not constantly vigilant about it.
And I think there's also a broader stewardship we have. I mean, you know, if we live in a world, the evangelical world, the evangelical church, to where we subtly or intentionally prioritize, value, esteem those with big followings. So by that I mean we tend to hire people who have big followings. We tend to invite to preach in our conferences people who have big followings. If you place such a premium on that, that the people who have big followings on social media, who have big platforms they command, if that's who's always getting the invitation, we can create a culture, a little subculture, an ecosystem, if you will, mm-hmm. that way overvalues self-glory and that way overvalues such a degree that it leads to self-glory and leads to self-promotion. We have to be mm-hmm. very careful as a whole system, do we not?
Yeah. So I do think there is nothing wrong by saying we have this opportunity to do this event. We want to serve pastors. These are well-respected men who would be a good steward of the time we will call these meeting together and would be most beneficial to those who will come there. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But you are absolutely right. It can slide into a thing where you are building meetings and events around the names.
Yeah, and it cuts both ways because, look, these are the Spurgeon lectures.
Yeah,
I don't want to have a lame preacher.
Right.
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't. It's not about how many Twitter followers you have mm-hmm. or how big your platform is, but I do want to have someone who's gifted to preach.
Right.
When we have events on this campus, you know, every other week it seems like, you know, mm-hmm. certainly every other month at least, you know, probably 3, 4, 5 significant events each academic semester. And we want to have people who are going to bless those in attendance.
Right.
We want people, frankly, that people want to come and hear preach.
Yes.
And so there's a balance there because oftentimes there are preachers who will bless those in attendance who the attenders may not have known before or do not know. And
right.
so there's a balance there, right? If a person is gifted and God has blessed them because of their gifting and raised them up because of their gifting, then look, I'm not going to apologize for having, you know, for having preachers that are well known if mm-hmm. they're well known because God is using them and they're gifted and they work hard and they're disciplined themselves for the study and for preaching. But I should be convicted if we just, you know, scan social media and sought to bring in, you know, the five people with the biggest social media followings and put them on the stage because they would draw a crowd, right? That cuts the other way.
Yeah.
And so there's a balance there, but we have to root out any sense of self-glory and the self-promotion that enables self-glory. So I'm trying to pull this together in a couple of helpful ways for our listeners, HB. Help us to know, how can pastors, how can preachers fight self-glory in ministry?
One thing I would say is make friends with the parable of the laborers in Matthew 20, 1 through 16. It really is a carryover from the story of the rich young ruler at the end of Matthew 19 and Peter's question, we left everything, what shall we get? And several times in his answer to Peter, which includes that parable of the laborers, Jesus makes a big statement. The last shall be first, and the first shall be last. And I just meditate on that truth regularly, that I do really believe that is the truth. There are many who we give a lot of acclaim to, and when we get to heaven, we'll be at the back of the line, and faithful shepherds who were not well known will be up front and receive the honor from the Lord for their faithfulness in an obscure place. The Bible says in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 2, that it is required of a steward that he be found faithful. And I think there is a big, big key to guarding your heart against self-glory, picking faithfulness over success. We have no control over success one way or another, but we are responsible for faithfulness to the stewardship in which the Lord has entrusted to us. As a young pastor, I got my hands on R. Kent Hughes' book, Liberating Ministry
from the Success Syndrome. It's a great little book.
And for maybe 10 years, I made myself read that book annually. I would encourage the hearers to read that book and just walk through those chapters as he biblically describes what the biblical scriptural measurements of success are. And there are things like faithfulness and humility, not crowds, not numbers, not size. It's really knowing where the finish line is and just pointing in that direction and being willing to be faithful over the long haul. I think that is key, to pick faithfulness over success. It is the end of 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 5, those list of commands. This last one is fulfill your ministry. You don't get credit for how well you start. Anybody can start fast. I think we see these days how important it is for men of God to finish strong.
HB, well said, and that's an appropriate point on which to finish. Thank you for joining me in the studio today and being with me on Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, God bless you and all he's entrusted to you. We'll look forward to our next time to having you on the program. Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.